Hey there, and welcome back to the newest episode of the WP HackerCast. If you've been listening to the podcast since I started, you'll know that I've not put out any new episodes since last June. This was mostly because I did not expect the second half of 2019 to be as busy as it was, and sadly, podcasting took a back seat. I'm happy to say that life has settled down, and I'm back to talking to interesting people in the WordPress space. Today's guest is Tammy Lister. Tammy is an experienced designer at Automattic, but my chat with her took us on a much more interesting journey into tea, yoga, meditation, and all things esoteric. Before we get into my chat with Tammy, I'd like to take this time to ask that if you like the podcast, please consider leaving a rating or review on iTunes, or leave a comment on the website wphackercast.com. You can also reach out to me on Twitter at @John_Bossinger. And now, onto my chat with the always interesting Tammy Lister. Let's try that again. Sorry. Hi, Tammy. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm good. Okay, so I'm very open on this podcast. This is now the second time I'm saying hi to Tammy. We've recorded one podcast before this, which I didn't get out. Then we started recording this one and I didn't hit record. So I don't know if I should be in this podcasting game.
No, I love it. We just get to say hello like multiple times. It's great.
Awesome. So, okay. So we actually did a short introduction where Tammy told us all about who she is and what she does. So I'm going to ask her to do that again. So Tammy, who are you? What do you do? And how did you get involved with WordPress?
So I am Tammy. I kind of got involved with WordPress when I was blogging. And then somewhere I was torturing my own CMS, as everybody kind of did. And someone suggested this relatively new thing of WordPress and that it would be better. Just kind of took off from there with it for me through themes and then really through BuddyPress. I was working freelance for myself for a very long time. I was one of those people that used to go to WordCamps, make all the connections and then do work that way. So I totally understand that. And then I ended up applying to Automattic. I was at a crossroads in my career, and I'm really glad. I'm now a experienced designer who is paid full time to contribute and work on WordPress. So for someone that was contributing before, it's a bit of a kind of dream to kind of be a contributor. So that's kind of great.
Absolutely. And so your role is an experienced designer. Now I know that automaticians can. Mm-hmm. Choose their own titles. Was that a title you chose or was that one given to you?
Yeah, so my actual role is a product designer, which is, I work on products. So my work specifically is on Gutenberg, the new editor, and it's also on kind of the design team as well. Okay. So I like experienced designer because I think, particularly in the open source space, our role is kind of working on the experience of both design and also those that are creating design. So for me, it kind of works. It's a bit of a riff on user experience designer.
Okay. Now I know because we've spoken about this, that something that you're quite interested in is kind of, the future of tech and the future of design and those kind of things.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of the next thing that I want to dive into. Mm-hmm. We've had conversations about sort of the usual podcast questions and the how did you this and what are you this and what are the other. Today's podcast is kind of a little bit more free-flowing. I don't have any questions planned. We've just discussed some topics, so we're going to see where it goes. But the question that I'd like to start with is, in terms of where we are on the web today, now, mm-hmm. you and I have this sort of advantage, if you will. We're children of the 90s. We've been around since before the internet existed. We've kind of seen how, CMSs have come about and WordPress has come about and how the web has changed. In your opinion, where do you see this thing called the web going? If you look at where we were 20 years ago to where we are now to maybe the next 20 years?
Big question. I don't know if I see where it's going. And I'm going to kind of quantify that because I'm not sure if someone who is my age can see where it's going or should be the one that sees where it's going as well. To me, I almost think the word web as well, and I've been kind of musing on this recently, the word web almost does it a disservice because that kind of is something like if you as you say, the kind of coming through the 90s, all the 80s even, I'm pretty old, that was the computer, right? The desktop computer, that was the web and everything was like, new and fancy and neon about the web, right? And that's not what it is. It's an integral thread. It's just a digital experience. It's just the way that a lot of people experience the world now. And I think that is the way of starting to consider it. It's not a another dimension, but it almost is another dimension. Like it's almost just the experience that people have. I think once we start thinking of it in experience terms and in pure and experience terms rather than the device that you get, it's like walking through a door, right? That's always the, it used to be the old thing, like turn the modem on, turn the computer on, and then you're in the web, right? Like that, no, because I just pick my phone up and I'm there. I'm kind of already in there because I have like an Apple Watch on me and all those kind of things, right? Yeah, I think it's a thread of part of what we do. And I think once we recognize that, there's many levels to that. We need to be cautious because it's a part of everything we do. But we then can start unlocking how we can enhance the experience that we are today. That is the bit that super gets exciting for me, is how it can become an enhancement and an enabler of experience.
Right. That's very interesting because, funny enough, I was watching a video the other day. There's this person that I follow on the web, and it's a game review thing. And you know, I'm a gamer myself. And the video was titled "PC Gaming is Dead, Long Live PC Gaming." And the crux of the video was exactly what you've just said: is back in the 80s and the 90s, and to some extent the early 2000s, everybody thought about computer gaming as a thing you did on a home computer. And then the industry changed, and then consoles became more popular, and then consoles became the thing that was in your house as your entertainment system. Yeah. And I wonder sometimes, and I include myself in this group, and I include even people like Matt, who are in their 30s this year. So the sort of the 30 to 50-year-olds who have kind of grown up with the web. I almost wonder if we're getting, in a way, too old to understand how the next generation is using the web. I consider the fact that, to me, when I talk about the digital experience, the web, the internet, that to me is a computer. Yes, I use my mobile device, but it's not my primary way of using it. But I know from many people, that's the only way they access anything online. And so I think I almost worry sometimes that those of us who have come as far as we have, we don't know how to understand what those people in their teens and 20s are going through right now.
I think we will worry if we get in the way. And I think that's the thing. We can still be there, like, to create the future or whatever we're talking about. There needs to be an understanding of history. And there's always a problem, right, in an open source project or in anything when people don't do archaeology and they don't understand the history. I feel like I'm some old web geriatric saying this at that point, but there needs to be the whole spectrum of it. It's more if people, I'm 45 this year, and I don't have a right to tell a teenager or a 20-year-old what the future of this platform is, because it's part of what they're going to create. I should be listening to what they're doing. I should be seeing what they're excited about, but I should equally be looking at what 80-90-year-olds are doing with the platform and being excited by what they're doing. And I think there's often this assumption of kind of saying like people can't give information on that, or like they're going to be in the way. I think you have to check yourself to not see it. For me, my iPad is my constant friend. I love it. You're mentioning gaming. I'm also, unsurprisingly, because of the timing, come from a gaming background as well. And really, for me, my primary gaming device is my Switch now. I also play a lot on my iPad. There's something about that for me. I've moved completely digitally. I don't have sketchbooks anymore. I use my iPad. And it just works for me. And I think that's the thing. Their technology is going to be such a support and an enhancer of our old age that just like we couldn't have had. Your brain can flip a bit thinking what we're going to be like in the old people's home, right? Like, because there's this vision of what someone's like when they're old. And I guess every generation doesn't think they're going to be when they get old, right? But I think there is going to be a difference. I think there's going to be, and then you've already seen it with older generations than my generation, there's an enhancement, there's people who are having robots in nursing homes and all these kind of things that are the very crude ways of doing it because we're just trying them out. But there's a lot to be said for the way that this can become a companion and a support to our experience throughout our entire life. But we have to look at those in the entire life.
Interesting. Just quick, short question before I carry on to the next one, because I just want to confirm something. I think you did say this earlier, but you, in your job, you are supporting the project 100%. You don't do, say, 50% internal work and then 50%. Okay.
No, so the team I'm on, I donated fully back to the project.
Okay, so that's great, because that leads on to my next question perfectly. So as somebody who is sponsored to work on the open source project, I find it very interesting that you made the comment now about people knowing the history, because one of the things that I did when I discovered, so I'd been a WordPress user for many, many years just as a blogger, but when I discovered the community and the development community and everything else, open source and all of that, one of the first things that I consider myself fortunate that I stumbled across was Matt mentioned at the very first State of the Word that I watched about this book called Milestones that had been written about the history of the project. And I'm an avid reader. So the first thing I did was I got hold of a copy of this book and I started reading it. And when Matt makes comments about, you know, people freaking out about, what was the name? There was a code name for the refresh of the admin.
Crazy Horse?
Crazy, thank you, Crazy Horse. Or some, you know, when people freak out about those things, and he refers to, you know, the what went on with Gutenberg is similar. Yeah. This has happened before. We've been through this before. I almost worry that something that you've said now is that people coming into the project now, the younger people that are getting involved, they don't know about this history, so they're kind of almost making the same mistakes that others have made in the past, in terms of bringing their voice through to the project and making sure that they're heard. And not only younger people, but older people like myself who come into the project later, who have their opinions about the way things should be done and the way we should do things. And if they just went back and read the history, they would go, okay, well, this is why we don't do things that way, or this is how we get past those kinds of problems. And I wonder sometimes if there's a way, and maybe you have some opinions, this could just be an open-ended question, is if there's a way that we could help those coming into the project gain all that history and knowledge very quickly. And I think Milestones is part of that.
I think if you just kind of look at real world or outside world examples, and if you look at like the way we understand history in the real world, right, and the way that when you're younger you learn history, you learn it into museums, or you learn it by reading books, or you learn it through word of mouth or history, and I think there has to be that in the project. I don't always think there is enough of that. I think there's a lot of presumed knowledge. It's like you open up track and suddenly the gift of knowing everything about WordPress will be bestowed upon you, which is not right. And track isn't a welcome, and it's also not an oracle. It's not going to give you that information. But as well as that, I think it's about practicing archaeology. And it's the same, like, for me, I need to be practicing it. The project's a big place, and I will frequently wander into spaces where decisions have been made, or where there's stories and there's history that I just don't know. To wander into that and presume that is not the way that I should also do it. We're human, we all do that. But just practicing that no matter what point you're at. Archaeology is just the way, I guess from a design perspective, the way that I've been trained as a designer to work is find the problem, there's a problem. You then look for all the threads, the loose threads of the problem, where this unraveled, what happened, where's it going, where's the research, where's the past, insights into this, you know, that kind of mindset before you start thinking of solutions. You may do a little bit of a sketching, but you need to know the ground, because someone may have come up with that solution. Spoiler, there's only so many solutions in the world, so they probably have come up with that solution. and that's just a part of human nature. I still think there's a part of human nature we can and shouldn't stop with just running into a room and going, I'm going to do something, and diving in. That's also great. It's just about that balance of just surfacing everything. If we haven't got our virtual museum and we haven't got our books available, then we can feel indignified when someone doesn't know that history. So there's that. We're long project. There has to be, there's often an ethereal nature of the web, so we don't document it, or we don't kind of leave that, but it's not going. And I think that's very like an early web mindset of like, oh, just put it on there, it's just gonna go, or whatever. Like, no, things don't go on the web, they stay there. There's a permanence, I would say, that's even more so than the physical world sometimes.
That's very interesting. It's funny you say about, you know, when you join the project and when you try and do something, and sometimes there's a excuse me, there's a place for just doing something, and sometimes there's a place for a bit more of a you know, sort of thought through a process. I'm finding it very interesting at the moment. I'm, for want of a better word, leading this sort of WP Notify project that everybody is super keen to have in place, and they would love it to happen tomorrow. And most of the time when new people join the channel, it's right, how, when are we gonna do this, and how are we gonna do this? And and I've tried to take very much, so I, being somebody who's never actually contributed to core, I've taken a very what I like to think of as almost studious approach. So I reached out to a number of people, yourself included, Alon. I reached out to Gary Pendergrass. I reached out to a number of people in and out of Automattic, different companies involved in the community at different levels, to kind of get some feedback of what's worked for them and what hasn't in certain scenarios. And one of the biggest pieces of feedback I got from most of the people was, because this is such a big thing, don't just rush in and build something. You know, do some requirements gathering, do some research, do some documentation first. And that's the process we're going through. What I find interesting is that sort of initial, yes, we want to do this, and people come and join, and they're full of ideas. And then when you try and slow them down and say, yes, okay, that's great, but we're still busy with this process. We're still busy putting together this document that will pick up all the threads and make sure we've thought about everything, and we've kind of covered all of our ideas that we want to try and cover, and then turn that into a version one. They almost go, well, no, I want something tomorrow, and this is not good enough. And it's quite interesting.
Yeah, it's a little bit like being conducting an orchestra. You've got to have the different pitches and the different paces of involvement, excitement. If everybody was like excited all the time, that would be draining. I mean, I love it, I get excited as anyone, but it would be draining, and you need that calm, but you need all of that. And I think that's the thing. And I've done it, like, if you try and put too much process, or you try and hold something up too much, then the balance is off. And it's difficult, because, you know, conducting an orchestra is difficult. But yeah, that's the biggest thing about a lot of the work, particularly in open source, I think. I mean, I think it's in any project, but I think it's more when people come in and out at random times. It's like a weird kind of modernist music piece or something like that going on. I think you're trying to do orchestra.
Maybe there's a reason that the founder of WordPress is also a jazz musician. So that kind of leads on quite nicely to the next thing that I want to chat to you about. And this is something that, so if you follow Tammy on either Twitter or on the web or whatever, mostly what I see you post is things about either drinking tea or, you know, these yoga or meditation. And that's kind of part of the reason why we're chatting today. In terms of an open source project, and in terms of, you know, giving up of your time, and if you're like me, you're not necessarily 100% sponsored time-wise, there is an element of, you know, managing your own sort of work-life open source contribution balance. And you and I have had discussions about things like meditation, and I know you're involved with yoga, and I know, you know, tea is a big part of your life. So I first want to start off with the tea thing. Okay, so has this tea thing been an excuse the assumption, because my family is from the UK, but is it a thing of, because you're from the UK, the tea is such a big thing? Or have you gone through a bit of a journey to get you?
Maybe. I don't know. I don't actually like traditional English tea, though. I don't tend to drink traditional English tea. I veer more into the green teas. So, I mean, I probably have, like, in my genetics, a passion for tea. And there's that cultural thing of, you know, take a moment, have a cup of tea for whatever ails you. Have a moment with a cup of tea. If it's been a bit of a dramatic time, have some sugar in your tea. And people could. So, yeah. But I think for me, coffee kind of makes me like a toddler. I get way too like hyper with it, so it's never been really my jam. I tried with coffee, but it's never been really my thing. And just there's something contemplative about tea. I like big bowls of tea, so there's something about that, I guess. More so as I kind of got older. You know, it's not something maybe I was running around at 20 drinking lots of tea. But yeah.
Cool. And so it's interesting you mentioned about the coffee thing, because coffee is one of the, what I used to joke and say that coffee was one of the addictions that I was sort of happy to live with.
Yeah.
But I've noticed that as, and this might be an with age comes wisdom kind of thing, but I've noticed that if I drink too much coffee, I actually struggle to sleep.
Yeah.
And I saw Helen posted something about that on Twitter, where she was actually tracking her sleep on her iPhone, Fitbit, whatever it was. And she was saying that she noticed if she stopped drinking coffee after lunch.
Yeah.
And then I tried that and suddenly I'm sleeping. So I was quite amazed at how just making that change affected, you know, my body. And I think it's interesting because I didn't drink a lot of coffee until I became more involved in web development, not specifically open source, but just web development and kind of my career and what I was doing. And coffee became this crutch of, you know, staying awake until 2 in the morning. Do you find, so we're going to get to the types of green teas in a second, but do you find that with the drinking of tea, it gives you that same almost response that maybe drinking a cup of coffee does in the morning, but without the kick of the caffeine?
Yeah, it depends, because I often start with a matcha, which is like lots of caffeine. I think for me, it just has a different effect on me. Coffee, as I mentioned, just makes me way too hyper. It's great if I have jet lag or I'm super tired. If I'm like completely drained jet lag at a WordCamp, I will have a coffee just because it gives me the energy. But because it boosts me so much, it kind of like, yeah, so I just, for me, feel that it just fits me. And I think it used to be the thing in web development, right? Like, you've got to drink coffee. And I love the kind of uprising of tea drinkers in that sense, quite relaxed uprising of tea drinkers. Very polite.
it's a very slow riot.
Very contemplative rising. Yes. So that it's just whatever is your drink. And some people, caffeine is not great at all. So there's options. Tea kind of gives you lots of different options, and I think that is more appealing. There's just so much more variety of tea available now as well, which I think is opens up a whole world to people.
So do you have a tea schedule, if you will? Do you have a certain one in the morning?
I have a tea cupboard.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah. So tell us about the tea cupboard.
Yeah. Now I'm interested. I have a collection. Well, I don't know if like 4 teapots is a collection, but it might be. And I use different things for different ones. Like, I have one that I use oolong in. I have one that I use herbal in. One that I use my green, and one that I use my green flavors. This sounds really high maintenance as I am describing it. I have a tea caddy for my tea bags. I am not against tea bags. If they work for you, awesome. They're super easy. And then I have varieties of different teas. So I tend to always start off with matcha or something strong in the morning. At the moment, I'm drinking a cherry Japanese green because it's kind of like an afternoon, kind of late morning kind of up. And then towards the afternoon, if I'm having a work session, it'll be like a heavier oolong. It took me ages to get into oolongs. I was like, oh, that's bitter. I didn't like that. But I think it's an acquired taste as you drink more tea. You start getting kind of into that. And at night, I'm always happy. There's a tea company in England, and they do a Dozy Girl herbal tea. So good. It's like lavender and chamomiles. And it's just, you make a big mug of that, and you just, everything's right with the world at the end of the day.
Wow.
Yeah, that's awesome. It's really high maintenance.
Get some links from you.
And I travel with tea. That's also.
That was going to be my next question. Yeah. So do you have a little travel bag that you take with you? And
yeah, and it depends. Wow. I actually have a thing that makes tea, so I don't always take that traveling with me. I actually have a collapsible cup and little kind of silicon tea thing that I can use if I'm flying and want to be light as well. Yeah, I can never be too far from tea.
That's amazing. And so you mentioned earlier tea bags and teapots. So are you kind of making it from tea leaves from
predominantly, there's a couple of tea bags that I quite like. There's like an aloe vera and green tea with strawberry. Kind of amazing when you try it. It's like a real soothing tea. But generally, I make loose tea. Just because you can then chart how long you do it. I have like small teapots, so it's like a single use or a couple of uses. And it's better that way for me. You can get lots of different teas. So I generally have like 5 or 6 teas on the go at the same time as well.
Right. Amazing. And so this is something that I find quite interesting. So with my coffee drinking, I've almost kind of made it into a little bit of a ritual.
Mm-hmm.
When I moved into the office that I'm in now, I made a conscious choice not to get something that was quick and easy, because I wanted to force myself to get up and take a break.
Yeah.
And so I bought myself one of these little pour over jugs where you've got to put the filter in, you've got to put the coffee grinds in, you've got to pour the coffee over, you've got to let it drip, you've got to pour it. And now it's actually become part of my process that when I need to think about something. Do you find that the tea facilitates that as well?
I do. So my office is the floor above my kitchen. So in the house I live, I rent, so it's never always the same, but at the moment it is. So I actually have to go downstairs to get tea. I have a variable kettle, so I am that committed to tea. That tea is different temperatures and it just tastes just better if you use the water filters and you do that. It just helps the tea taste come through, or for me it does.
Right.
And I do have a process there. I tend to put it in kind of brew and then leave it there for a moment, and I'll go and look out the window. I live opposite a park, so I can go and kind of look at big trees, and then come back to it and time it, and then I go upstairs again. So there's definitely a little break. I remember when I was younger, I smoked cigarettes and I used the same thing, and now I guess it's the same kind of pause, and I think it's really important. It's a way healthier pause, and I think it's really, really important to have that moment of just going away, having that moment, coming back, and then doing it. You can use it at any point. You don't have to be in a moment where you need to do that, but just being able to kind of come back.
That's so true, and it's funny you mentioned about the smoking thing. I used to smoke as well, and I found that specifically as a developer, kind of the only way you got a break that wasn't your lunch break or getting in the morning was when you went out for a smoke.
Same as a designer.
You know, and you're in that tech, you're in that environment where the only time you get a break is if I actually quit and then joined a company and everybody there smoking, and you kind of feel like, well, if I go stand there without a cigarette, I feel like a bit of a knob, excuse the language. But I like the idea of the tea coffee thing and making that part of the process. And it's sadly, it's only something I discovered in the last 3 years. You know, I wish I'd have realized this earlier. So getting into the whole tea thing now, I find this quite interesting, because if we look at tea drinking as a process, you know, cultures that kind of make tea drinking into more than just a drink is your you know, Japanese and your Chinese culture. I mean, the Japanese have a whole ceremony around it. And that kind of leads into, you know, things like meditation and mindfulness and those kind of things. And I know that's something else that you're involved with, and I know it's something that you and I have had discussions about. Now, I want to start this by saying that the last time you and I spoke, you said to me, I hope you managed to get your meditation thing going. So after some conversations, and I had a Twitter conversation with Morton about, he was starting something and he recommended something and I tried it. I don't know if I'm doing it wrong or where I'm getting with this is, maybe I've discovered that the type of meditation that I was doing is maybe not right for me. And maybe what I understand as meditation is one thing and maybe it means something else. But what I've actually discovered is that I can quite easily sit still 10 minutes, 15 minutes, 20 minutes, beginning of the day, breathe, listen to a meditation, whatever. And I don't feel like I get any benefit. But I do feel like I get benefits if I get up and go for a walk and do the same thing, or if I go for a run and have the same kind of mindfulness and breathing and that kind of thing. So would you say that it's, I mean, I know you're not necessarily a meditation expert, but in your opinion, would you say that maybe people have the wrong idea about what meditation could or should be? And it doesn't have to just mean sitting still for 10 minutes and focusing on your breathing.
So For me, I used to say I couldn't meditate. That was like my thing. I can't meditate. I can't sit still long enough. My brain wants to do things. There's things happening on the internet. But I could do yoga, right? Hmm. And then I started doing yin yoga, which is basically holding poses for a certain amount of time. There's not some of the super difficult poses in yoga. So you're not holding some like body origami pose or anything like that for 20 minutes. There's one called frog that is a little bit, and that's meditation because you're in that position and you lean in because the way your muscles are, you'll be leaning more in over the duration of the time that you're holding the pose for. And that was my entry point to meditation. It was, oh, okay. So before it was just like the end of my yoga, I just lay down. Yeah. And I kind of lay there and the rest of the class lay there and my brain still was just like doing dances and not being quiet. Mm. And then I was kind of like, this is wrong. My brain should be quiet when I'm meditating. I should be in this like zen-like state. That's not necessarily meditation. Meditation is what works for you. And some people, it's walking meditation. Some people, it's sitting still as a stone and their mind is completely drained. And I think it's just taking time for what works for you. That's what I think. And that's what works for me. For me, I do different types. So yoga is still, I actually consider my yoga practice part of my meditation practice because it's still part of it. And I still take time each day to just be there. Sometimes my brain doesn't want to be quiet. So I use a calm app, and sometimes my brain doesn't want to do that, and that's fine. I'll keep it running, and if my brain is needing to focus on something, that's okay. There's a mindfulness of coming back, but I just think we do this with so many things. We see an Instagram picture of someone on a clifftop who like sat in the lotus position, looking incredibly serene, or whatever. Like it's what it is for you. Walking. Is a traditional form of meditation. Walking meditations are still part of it. I don't think you're doing meditation wrong. I think you're doing meditation that works for you. And maybe that's what works for you now. And you'll end up being one of the people that just sits in a lotus position doing whatever. But you shouldn't compare yourself to someone else's meditation. And the whole... It's so hard to do. Yoga is such a thing. Like comparing yoga, right, is such a big thing. You look at yoga bodies, or you look at someone doing this, and you're trying to compare to get the perfect pose or the perfect position. And meditation is exactly the same. And that only comes maybe with being a bit older and realizing that, you know, every time I compare myself to someone, turns out I fall short because I'm comparing myself to someone. So I would say you're probably doing meditation exactly right for you.
I think the thing that I kind of realized through all of this is that it's every human being has a requirement, and and for me, what I've discovered is that it's more about, are you able to find some quiet time where you can allow the myriad of thoughts that bombard you to not be there and be able to just be mindful and be mindless at the same time and just focus on yourself and you know, are you in a good place and are you doing the things you need to do?
I would note on that there's this thing of like, sorry for interrupting, but there's this thing of like emptying your mind, which I don't know how to empty my mind. Okay, I don't think most people, even if they're like, I don't think that's a state of anybody. And I think if it is a state, maybe your body stops working. So I'm not sure I fully want to do that. And I remember when I first started with mindfulness, and got that kind of, I think there's this mindfulness kind of disinformation almost about like you have to empty your mind, you free of the thoughts and let it flow, and it probably comes from like some 70s misunderstanding about practices or something. This is where it generally comes from, and it's not. It's either giving space for the thoughts that are important, which is important, or it's just recognizing, yeah, my brain's really noisy today. Great. And just watching the traffic. And being able to go into it if you want, or just like, yeah, just going like, yeah, it's really, really clogged up today. I'm just going to throw it.
I think that's the key. I think what you're saying there is so important. It's about, you know, understanding yourself enough to know that today is one of those days. And so therefore today might be a little bit more difficult because I've got so much going on, and just being more self-aware of how your brain is today, how your emotions are today. I think that we've kind of moved into this digital, and it's ironic, we were talking about digital earlier, now we're talking about it again, but there's so much going on, and there's so much information, and there's so much to worry about and to deal with and to think about, and there's WhatsApp messages and there's Facebook notifications and there's all of this stuff. And what I've almost discovered is that meditation is not so much about just sitting still and being quiet and focusing on your breathing, but it's about being able to focus your mind, as you say, on what are the important things today. Be able to prioritize the thoughts, be able to even have those thoughts happening, but they don't intrude on your priorities. And what I've discovered for myself, at least, is that I actually almost stumbled into this, if you will, because with my oldest going to school last year, I was getting into the office a lot earlier than I ever used to. So I used to only get into the office at about 9, and the rest of the team used to come online at about the same time, and it was kind of get into work and get going. Now I'm in the office an hour before anybody else on the team, you know, those that are in European time zones. And I literally will come in and I will go through the process of pouring myself a cup of coffee and doing the whole thing, and I'm just in that space. My brain is kind of just going, right, what's important today? What do I need to focus on? And I've discovered that's a form of meditation. You know, that's a form of
totally
gathering your thoughts and honing yourself. And I find it, what I think I'm trying to kind of express very badly is that people have this impression that if I don't sit down and do a 10-minute quiet time, then I'm not meditating.
Yeah, I just want to kind of comment. I think we sometimes vilify technology. So we blame technology on the fact that our brains are just human. And you know, if we were in another century, we'd probably be blaming, I don't know, something else, right? Like the coming of electricity, or we'd be blaming George plays his drums too loud. I don't know. Like there's always something that we blame on not taking care of ourselves, or we blame on not setting our own boundaries. And I think that's the thing I think we need to be very careful of, is because actually technology can empower us and it can enhance our experience. So to say that it's responsible for, that's just us not controlling things. You don't have to have a Twitter account. You don't have to follow everything on Instagram that makes you feel bad. Will you probably feel that you have societal pressures? Yes. I'm not kind of saying that there's not that feeling, but it's about being taking slowly kind of macro control of yourself, and slowly being able to do that and finding what works for you in different streams. And I think sometimes we dictate to people, like, you must, did you pick your phone up at the weekend? Because that's so bad, you can't do that. But for some people, they find that's almost soothing to be connected. And I think that's okay. I think everyone needs to find their own pace. I'm a pretty on person a lot of the time, as far as digital, but it works for me because I've got my structure. I'm very structured about the way that I do things, and it just works with my brain. And my brain can actually turn off looking at some really beautiful art on Instagram, right? And I'm very careful of who I follow, because it's stuff that I follow that fills me with joy and fills my heart. I don't try and go to spaces that don't do that, and if I find that, I will try and balance that with something. So I think that, and it's a very personal thing, and it's a very privileged thing to be able to recognize that. But I think sometimes we dismiss a lot of technology as like, oh, it's bad, and it's bad if it's uncontrolled, and it's bad if you're not in control of your experience as well.
But I mean, isn't that true for anything? I mean, yeah. You know, alcohol is good, but alcohol is bad if it's uncontrolled. You know, we won't get into the legal weed discussion. That's a whole different conversation. Some people might not handle that. So that's interesting because it kind of leads me onto something that I have spoken to a few people about on this podcast about, you know, mental health and self-awareness and open source and how those how sometimes open source involvement can lead you down a path where you forget to look after yourself because you're so involved in trying to do something for the project. I discovered last year that I was putting myself into too many things. And so I've had to actually take a step back from certain things. And I've actually taken a very big step back from the community team because I'm working on WP Notify and those kind of things. If somebody came up to you tomorrow and they wanted to get involved in the project and you wanted to give them some advice in terms of how to balance that, what advice would you give them?
I don't think there's a one size fits all. So I would find out about them. And I think that's the important thing. I think you need to find out about them and find out what type of person they are. Everybody is different. Be you neurodiverse, be you different gender, whatever. Everybody is so different. And I think everybody reacts to stress differently and everybody reacts to being in the project differently. My advice would be have something that's not the project that you do. It could be as small as like knitting, it could be as small as that, right? Or it could be as big as they've got a horse. I don't know, like anything that is something else. It could be they are just like a open source, that's what gives them the thing, and I'd be like, have a couple of open source projects just to kind of like be your thing. I think often we kind of look at the experience that's created it rather than the fact that the habits that have created it. I'm going to kind of say that. So if you have a tendency to something, you probably are going to do that no matter what situation you're in. So it's trying to find your behaviors and adjusting them a little bit. And this is all big and privileged and grandiose to say, but trying to just do that and be aware. As someone that is donated to the project full time, I have to be very aware of someone's time, and it's something I don't always work. You have to be conscious. Like, people aren't in the position I'm in. So I was contributing out of my own time and I was working for myself. And then I was doing like weird combinations of different times. And if you're doing any percentage of time, it turns out it's like over 100% of your time, right? Open source projects, if you let them, will take all the space you give them. So if you have a lot of space, that can just fill. Yeah, it's really, like, that's a very rambling way, but you can't give any advice. I would just listen to their situation and then give advice based on it, because every single person is different. For some people, going 100% into the project is right for them at that time. They may be needing a fast track in their career. They may be needing just escapism, to be honest. And that kind of can be okay. Moderation and all those kind of things. But I don't think it seems we can't look at technology as being a problem. We can't look at an open source project and say, you're bad. This is what you've kind of got to balance. It's a situation, and it's very much based on what that person will experience. Yeah.
No, fair enough.
It's a non-answer for you.
This is the lovely thing about this. That's your answer, and I asked for your answer. And the whole, you know, the whole point of why I asked that kind of question is because sometimes there is no right answer. Sometimes, depending on the scenario, depending on the person, depending on the situation, there is no right answer. So it's good to talk about it, because I think that, or at least in my opinion, there are people who want to give 100% of their free time and can manage it. And then there are those that want to and maybe can't. And as you say, you need to look at each individual scenario. You need to look at each individual situation and understand the person, understand what they're going through.
And as a project, we need to consider people, family, in that sense. And we need to just, I don't think everyone's an adult, so you shouldn't have feel entitled to tell someone to do something, we can look out for each other. There is no magic pill that solves every person's mental health problems, which is a big indication that it's a very complex field, and every human being is very different and very complex, and everyone's brains work differently. So that is exactly the approach. And if we're seeing someone and we're like, hey, if that was me, I'd probably be stressed. We can't then assume they're stressed. We might be like, okay, well, let's work out why they're doing that. If someone's online at a certain time, they may be online at a certain time because they did something in the day. If someone did this, then, you know, it's not assuming our headspace on people. I use headspace as in, like, I am literally in my head. I can't think, I'm not a mind reader. I can't think as someone else. And therefore, that brush is painted across anything that I interpret. And I could be the most amazing person at putting myself on the back burner before I interpret something, but I'm still going to because I'm in my head. It's really complex. And culturally, there's also cultural implications that we just don't think of. Age implications we just don't think of. Someone who's retired may have more time, and that's okay. And someone who's at the beginning may have more time because it's the school holidays, right?
And that kind of, I think, brings me to kind of something that I've seen that I think as a community we can do better, and that is just to, and people have said this, is that, you know, assume good intent. Assume somebody is doing something or saying something because they want to make things better. And I wonder sometimes, and I don't isolate the project for this. I think as human beings in the world we live in, with everything that goes wrong, we tend to, and I see it a lot around me, we tend to be a little bit more selfish maybe than we used to be, a little bit more, I want to get there first, I want to be the first through the door, blah, blah, blah. And I think as a community, we can do a lot if we just take a step back and just go, okay, where is this person coming from when they say that? And what is their background like? And what is their situation like? And how do they speak English, for example? Maybe English is not their first language, so the word they're using might sound to me like they're being aggressive, but that's just the way they're constructing a sentence. I think that we could all spend a lot more time slowing down in our communications as a community and not assuming the worst immediately.
I don't know if we are worse now. The reason I say that, it's almost like because there's so much information flowing, it's easier to, like, it's more obvious in lots of ways. Like, we know about things like neurodiversity, and we're more culturally aware. We probably go a few centuries ago, we wouldn't have encountered people that were different to us. So it would have probably been quite easy. You thought differently, you would be in a different circle. Like, I don't know. I sometimes think it's the volume of information that we have and the insights we have. A good example is, feels like we've got an awful lot of different types of people, right? I guess. I can't think of a good example. I'm trying to think of like an example that kind of hooks into it, but it doesn't really. It's just we hear every day about this different type of person or this different type of thing, or like, I guess now we have so many different names for tea. There you go. I'm going to go back to tea, right? And pretty sure back like, we didn't have so many combinations of like adding this to tea and this flavored tea or this different thing. And I think just for the way that people are, we have this weird juxtaposition that we have this amygdala. So we're kind of like panicking about most things and feeding our brain with that. But also there's actually, we're chemically disposed to be happy. If you see someone smile, try not smiling. You can't. It's just like, oh, and you feel that. There's, our brains are this real like contradiction in a beautiful way, but human nature is human nature, and that is part of what we have. We're all humans, unless the Somalians I don't know about wandering around. We are all humans, and that is our common point across everything, and our it varies and people have different things, but that's a commonality. And I think that's going back to what you're saying, just see the human. And it's so hard to not tell someone's story. I'm a designer. I will make up stories all the time. And I will want to, I also am predisposed to everything being okay. I always want everyone fine. It's everyone happy. We'd like a cup of tea. Everyone's good. Just because I guess there's a cultural thing, but also just that's my nature. I just want everyone happy. It's unfortunately not actually achievable. I don't have that power in myself, and I shouldn't have that power in myself, but you know, I try my darndest. And there's just, we hear so much bad going on that it almost feels overwhelming. It's about that balance. If you feel overwhelmed by things, find some, I can highly recommend Gifts for Corgis. Corgis are just, they just make you feel delighted. For me, anyway. But there's just like things like that. Just find those little happy things. And maybe technology can give you that. For me, TikTok, Corgi videos.
A little bit of insight there.
Cute dog things on TikTok are amazing, right? But there's like ways that you can find balance and charge. And every person, and I'm not saying that some people aren't not great in the universe, because that is true. And you don't have to necessarily associate with them, or you can limit the time that you associate with them. Some people also don't get on. That is something that took me a long time to work out, that one, everyone's not going to like me. And that's hard when you want everyone to be happy. and also, if you're like a community open source person, a lot of us do want everyone to like us. And a lot of us want everyone to be happy. And to realize that is like a bit of a, spoiler, you know. And then to be like, that's okay. That's just, I'm not going to jam with this person. And maybe someone else that I jam with will jam with that person. That's great. I'm going to jam with someone else.
I think that's so important, because I consider myself a similar kind of person. Like, I like people to like me.
I think it's cool being human.
Yeah. And I think as well, you know, I only sort of really got involved in the project about 3-4 years ago. So I kind of always have this very sort of, I'm still a kid learning all the ways of, you know, the adults kind of thing. So whenever I do come to, you know, big contributor days or whatever, and I meet these people who are, you know, vocal or whatever, I'm very kind of like, wow, you're amazing. And something that I kind of had to get through was, look, we're all doing what we're doing. We're all the same in terms of, you know, what we're trying to contribute, how much we love the project. We give what we can, and we're all important. And it kind of took me a while to get to, I think the big sort of shift for me was when somebody contacted me and thanked me for my contributions. I was like, whoa, that's weird to have happen. But it kind of makes you remember that to every single person, there's somebody else who they will always see as more experienced, or, you know, bigger celebrity in inverted commas,
and
or whatever.
You don't just get to be more amazing just because you've been around longer. That actually is probably like that. The opposite could be true. Like, I don't know. Like, and I think, like, it's going back maybe to the start of our conversation about like listening to younger generation, or being open and not being in the way of the younger generations. Those are us who've been in the project a while, and I have, if we're not connecting with the person whose first, second, or minute it is in the project, and not learning from that person, the project dies. I don't want WordPress to die. I'm in that project, right? Like, so by that, I should be looking at where the next design leads are coming from, where the next amazing people are coming up, right? And that is what excites me. But that takes a lot, because that takes you to be comfortable enough with what you're doing, and that's a hard thing for all humans to do, is to do that. And I'm not perfect, nobody is, to kind of get that. Yeah, it's very, and the project isn't perfect. We have to recognize not the our mortality as a project, I guess, is a little bit of what's recognizing your career mortality and your project mortality is really, it's a word to use. But I think if we start thinking of it in those terms, we maybe will nurture it and care for it a little bit more.
Okay. No, that's actually very true. I never thought about it that way. That's why I love having these conversations. So we're getting close to time now. As I said the last time when I interviewed with you, I could talk to you all day, but I don't want to take up too much of your time. So I'd like to end off with possibly a big question, possibly a hard question, possibly a question that doesn't have an answer. If you could give somebody who's joining the project for the first time, they happen to stumble across this podcast, they're keen to contribute, they don't know where to start, they don't know what to do. If you could take them under your wing and say, this is how you should start, or this is a piece of advice that I could give you, not knowing who they are, not knowing their background, this is a very generic, general comment.
Yeah.
What would that be and why?
What do you want to do? Would be my question back. I'd answer a question with a question, because it's a bit like, oh, this is like my age, you know, choose your own adventure books. That's exactly what this is like, and that's exactly what it should be like. We should allow someone to end, and we should encourage that you enter the project and you go where it works. And I think that is, yeah, just like, what do you want to do? What do you want to create? What excites you? And what's kind of, why did you come here? What are you after doing? And all that kind of stuff. Because, I mean, not to kind of force them, like, what are you doing? but just in a way that they're this amazing gift to our project. And if we say, right, you're going on this team, you're doing this, and that's not necessarily right. And I've been felt like I was the wrong shape for an area before in open source projects. And that it's really important that you find your home, and maybe your home moves. Mine has. I've moved around different areas and done different things as I've grown and I've developed. So yeah, what are you interested in, and what are you looking to do? Is that... The word, I think, is kind of curious. If we as a project are curious about, in a good way, about anyone that comes into the work, and if we then enable them. So curiosity alone is like, I'm suspicious almost, I like it or whatever, but curiosity backed up by engagement and then support, I think is really important. So be curious about the person that's come in, welcome them, and then whatever you can do to support and enable them on that journey is the important thing. And there are so many people in this project, no matter which area that you happen to wander into, that you are going to have that. And be okay about moving areas, I think, is so important. Sometimes it feels like I'm on the design team, I have to stay on the design team, I can never go from the design team. Design for life. Design can be done in different teams. or community or whatever, like you've gone from being community doing a lot, and now you're like, hey, feature notifications, this is a problem that needs fixing, and now you're going over there doing different skills as well, which I think is really, really important.
And that's perfect. I love your rambling. Your ramblings are amazing. But it's so true what you say, though. You know, what do you want to do? And the other one as well, which I found very enlightening once I realized that, is I don't have to just do this. I initially got involved in docs. I initially got involved with the HullPub project, and it just wasn't working for me. And then I stumbled into community, and it was amazing. And now my time has moved on to something else, and that's so important. So I'm really glad you said that. Awesome. So Tammy, it's been wonderful talking to you. It always is wonderful talking to you. I look forward to hopefully seeing you at WordCamp Europe again this year. Maybe we can share some tea. Maybe you can introduce me to some of your more interesting teas. Cool. If people want to find you online, where can they get hold of you?
Yeah, I'm Karmatoast on everything, pretty much. And just, I love chatting to people. So I know it's like something when someone says, reach out to me, because that's kind of like daunting, but I'm more than happy to. And you can find me at WordCamp Europe if you're coming, or find me digitally if you want to as well.
Awesome. That's Karmatoast, K-A-R-M-A-T-O-S-E-D.
K-A-R-M-A-T-O-S-E-D. Yeah.
Perfect. Awesome. Well, again, I say this every time, but thank you very much. It's been lovely chatting to you, and please enjoy the rest of your day.
Thank you.